we'll talk about the Republican presidential candidate debate in Iowa last night and the news that Texas Governor Rick Perry will enter the race, as well as other state and national political news in this edition of The Week in Review. Good morning, I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, August the 12th. Every Friday at this time, we welcome in two guests from different political perspectives to talk with you about the news of the week. We're going to start this edition of The Week in Review off with the recall news in Wisconsin and whether or not the outcome of the recall elections this week means a recall of Governor Walker is more or less likely. Plus all the troublesome economic news of the week and much more. Plus, we welcome your input. What would you like to talk about? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Let me welcome our guests. We have with us today Steve Prestegard, who is author of The PrestaBlog. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
And also with us, Christine Bremer-Moogley, attorney at Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau. Good morning, Christine.
Hi, Joy.
Well, thanks to both of you for being with us. Let's start with the recall news. There were two Republican state senators who were recalled this week. They were defeated by their Democratic challengers. Four were not. Four will keep their jobs. And the Republicans will keep the majority in the state Senate, albeit by just one vote. Christine, what's your reaction to this outcome? Was this a win or a loss for Democrats in general?
Well, you know, I really believe that it's a huge win for the Democrats. I mean, when we talk about the recall, I think there was a great deal of overconfidence in terms of saying we're going to take back the Senate. The fact that we were playing on a Republican playing field and we still took two places is really amazing. You know, the recall efforts were not started by the Democrats. The recall efforts were started by a Utah group who actually had its base in trying to recall the Tucson sheriff who actually said that the shooting of Gabby Giffords was politically motivated. And then he took on the Wisconsin 14. And so, you know, when we think about that and think about it, this all started in February 24th. And that's where the recall began. You know, the Democrats said, we're going to fight back. And when they did, they had to fight back on very strong Republican playing field. So when we think about that and think about the fact that we took back two-thirds of the Senate majority, you know, I think it's an amazing victory.
What do you think it says, Steve?
Well, apparently Democrats need a math lesson. So let's keep this in mind. 17 is more than 16. Or if you like, since the Packers are playing this weekend, you can put it in a football term. If, let's say, Team R is expected to win by 5 points, but they only win 17-16 over Team D, who won the game? And the answer is still Team R. That's an interesting little tidbit about the Tucson sheriff, which has absolutely nothing to do with this state. It was perfectly obvious that the I'm not even sure this was necessarily the Democrats' initial idea, but it was perfectly obvious that the public employee unions were so angry about losing their Cadillac benefits for work that really wasn't Cadillac quality that's how the recalls got started. And the fact is, their goal was to take over the state Senate, and the fact is, they did not do that. Now, you could argue, I suppose, whether a one-vote majority that includes Dale Schultz is actually a majority at all. It certainly puts him in a very interesting position, but the fact is that the majority leader of the state Senate later this year is going to be the same person who was the majority leader of the state Senate earlier this year, and the minority leader is also going to be the same. If your goal is to win over the Senate and you didn't do it, then you lost.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, you also ended up spending $35 million that you now can't spend on any of the races that are up in 2012.
Christine, let Christine respond.
I think that, you know, the tone of your response, Steve, as much as I'm fond of you, belies really the problem here. And I think that's what most people in Wisconsin are really pretty sick of. You know, what we really were looking for here when the Republicans started this recall was to say, okay, if you want to try to recall, you know, and they started out trying to recall five of our senators. They realized they couldn't possibly recall Senator Miller. They couldn't possibly recall Senator Risser. And they couldn't possibly recall Julie Lassa because of the strength of their communities and their constituents. And they picked on senators who they thought maybe they had a chance of. When the Democrats looked at it, we said, we're going to go for everybody, and we played on their playing field. You know, what the people were looking for, really, I believe, when we looked at this recall, was some accountability, so that this tyranny of the majority that everybody was experiencing when Scott Walker first came into power with his initial onslaught with legislation would be stopped, and that people would at least start listening to the other side. The people that gave him the goodwill of the governorship did not expect him to do what he did. And so when we talk about what happened when the elections, the recall elections were mounted, it was the fact that, you know, just like what the tone that Steve just had talking about, you know, bashing our public workers. I mean, nobody really bought into that. That wasn't something that was even talked about in the election. So when we talk about where we started with this, we started with it with the Republicans. We finished with the Democrats taking two back. So now there is accountability. And now I think, yes, you know, we still have the same leader in the Senate, but he's got to be accountable to the people. So I really believe that this Republican mini-majority is going to have to be looking over their shoulders and saying, okay, we've got senators in Democratic seats, and we've got assembly people in Democratic seats because of the 2010, you know, election returns, which were not what we expected, but they are what they are. They're looking over their shoulders, and they're saying, gosh, if this had been statewide, this would have been a landslide for the Democrats.
Well, Steve, what about Governor Walker saying that he's looking forward on to working with the Democratic Party, and he thinks that there ought to be more bipartisanship from here on out?
Well, so there should be more bipartisanship, I guess, except, of course, it's kind of interesting that he brought that up, seeing as how usually the side that wants more bipartisanship is the side that lost. I am unaware of any instance at all of any significance that when Democrats were in control of the state legislature in 2009, in 2010 with Jim Doyle as governor, where any of that touted bipartisanship occurred. Democrats, when they were in, jammed down a $2.1 billion tax increase down our throats. No Republican votes, no Republican input was allowed. They jammed through a tax increase in a budget that turned out to be a complete disaster for this state, and November 2nd is the result of November 2nd was the result. Democrats got fired in every position in the statewide elected positions except for Doug LaFollette, and there was no swing anywhere in the country that was as large as the swing from what we had on November 1st to November 2nd in terms of who controlled which party or who controlled which side of things in Madison. So to say that people weren't listening to all that, the voters always vote with their feet, and that's the result. The thing is, politics, you have to remember, is a zero-sum game. One side wins, the other loses. 2 years ago, Republicans lost, Democrats lost after that, and, you know, until somebody reduces the stakes in politics so that people can play together, so to speak, how is bipartisanship going to actually happen?
He says that he wants to focus on jobs, and I think he thinks that jobs is a bipartisan issue. Christine, what do you make of Governor Walker's reaction to the recall results?
Well, you know, wouldn't it be great if he were really sincere about that? But, you know, Governor Walker can talk nice, but he acts mean. You know, when we look at this right now, one of the things that makes him talk about this is his poll numbers. I mean, they're dropping like a rock. You know, his 43% approval rating, you think he's not aware of that? And if we're talking about jobs, then why are we cutting so many of our public workers? I mean, you can't say that that 3,400 public sector jobs being lost is somebody that cares about the jobs. $70 million cut to our technical colleges, $250 million cut to the University of Wisconsin system where we're training our future workers. This isn't a jobs program that's really going to take off. I think that the governor, you know, by signing the redistricting plan on the day of the election, so he can protect Alberta Darling, for instance, if she were to lose, he was worried about that. I mean, that's where this bipartisanship talk comes from. I pray that now, because the people have spoken, they're going to be looking over their shoulders and trying to be more accountable. I pray for that, but I don't believe it's going to happen until there is more, there's another election and people really speak what they want. Well, what we've got right now is not following the Wisconsin tradition, and people want it back.
Let's talk a little bit about a possible another recall election, and that being of Scott Walker. The Democratic Party and Walker opponents say they will go ahead with their plans to try to recall the governor. Were those plans dealt a blow at all, Christine?
You know, I don't think so at all. As a matter of fact, you know, I think the people that I talk to are pretty pumped up about it. I mean, they think that, look, if we could take back on Republican playing fields two really important seats and make, you know, and make the other elections look like, you know, they were really hotly contested. And, you know, with Luther Olson's seat, it was over 100 years before a Democrat had ever won a seat there, 100 years of Republicans, and yet Fred Clark came 48% of the vote. You know, what does that say? It says that the electorate is divided and they really want accountability. And I think that if we now look at the other districts like up here in Marathon County, Eau Claire, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, we haven't had a chance to speak on recall yet. And I think once that chance is given, if things continue the way they are, people will sure take it up and they'll go for it. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's been, I don't think at all that recall has hurt. I think the trust and goodwill of the people that was extended to Governor Walker has been abused, and he's going to hear from the people about that abuse.
Steve, what do you think about a potential recall of Governor Walker?
Well, as far as the polls go, first I guess I would point out, what's President Obama's polls doing right now? Just a thought. I would agree, however, that a recall will, or at least a recall attempt will take place. What I think has been demonstrated in the past several months is that Democrats and their buddies are able to generate enough signatures to force a recall. They are not successful enough to generate enough votes to switch control from one party to another, clearly. And you'll notice that the two words that you never, ever heard in any of the six Senate races, GOP Senate races, or the three Democratic Senate races were the words collective bargaining. So they bring out this canard, basically, that says that that unless you spend exactly the amount of money that we want to, you're horribly ruining education and healthcare and whatever preferred social service you're talking about. So basically, you know, they will try to get a recall going. I think it's a really dumb move, not only for broader political reasons, but let's remember that in 2012, Barack Obama is going to attempt to win Wisconsin. There is going to be a U.S. Senate race that'll be an open race. You're not going to have Herb Kohl's bazillions of dollars to spend anymore. Plus, half of the state senate plus the entire assembly, and on top of that, you're going to throw in a recall attempt against a governor, and who will be judged, by the way, not on anything that's happened this year, but he will be judged on what the economy is doing a year from now. That's the bottom line of all of this.
Let me hold you there, Steve, because we're past break time and we have a lot of callers who want to get in on this as well. So we will take your calls on the Wisconsin recalls coming up after this short break. And we have more recalls to talk about, or at least the two Democratic state senators face recall elections on Tuesday. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Plus other state and national headlines in this edition of The Week in Review with Christine Bremer-Moogley and Steve Prestigard. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up Monday on the State Capitol Report, we will be welcoming in Governor Scott Walker to talk about his reaction to the recall elections of this week. He's going to talk about his call for bipartisanship and job creation. We'll also preview the remaining recall elections, the two Democratic state senators, Senators Holprin and Wirch, facing a recall election next Tuesday. We'll talk about that and more during our State Capitol Report on Monday between 7 and 8 here on the Ideas Network. Right now, it's our regular Friday Week in Review. We have with us Steve Prestigard, who is author of the Presta Blog, and Christine Bremer-Moogley, who is an attorney with Bremer and Trollop Law Offices in Wausau. And we have many callers, so let me go to Joe in Eau Claire. Hello, Joe.
How are you doing?
Very good.
I guess one comment I have, and I agree with what the one thing that he said, I'm pretty independent, but Walker has made huge cuts to education and given it a lot to special interests. So in 2012, if this economy is not doing any better, which I really don't think it's going to be, and we're not seeing all these jobs he's promised, all these senators that got put back in, a lot of them by pretty narrow margins, I think are going to be history. They've supported him. We're going to create jobs. We got our fiscal house in order. I don't know how many times I've heard that. But this Friedman law of privatization, school vouchers, I think when people see the programs and the schools already starting to get cut, I think Wisconsinites are smarter than that, are going to see through this. And I think if I was those four Republican senators, I wouldn't feel real good about keeping my job a year from now, and I'll take my comment off the air.
Well, since it's Christine's turn, go ahead, Christine.
Well, Joe, I absolutely obviously agree with you. I think that these mean-spirited cuts to education, we're not going to really feel them until the stimulus money runs out, and then it's going to be something really, really difficult for us. I live up in Wausau, near you, up in Eau Claire, and our school district people tell me that we're okay now, but they're really, really worried about the future, and that's when Governor Walker's going to really feel it. You know, one thing that I have to respond to Steve, when you said there were two words that weren't mentioned in the ads for the Democrats for the recalls against the GOP were collective bargaining, but you know what? We never heard two other words from the other side, and that were the words Scott Walker, because they ran from him. So, you know, and on with regard to the polling, you know, 47% for President Obama right now. For the members of Congress and the GOP, this polling is 13% approval rating. I think if I were Obama, I'd be pretty happy with that.
Mm-hmm. Steve. Noel, Steve.
Well, there's a lot there. First off, I have never heard of someone who declares themselves to be an independent to, you know, take shots at one side and not say a single contrary thing about the other side. So call me a little bit skeptical. But the real point is that, you know, as I said, the elections in 2012 are going to be about the economy. Those people of us who have the sickness of being interested in politics get stuck in a lot of, well, who made the right campaign move or, you know, whatever. And the vast majority of voters don't care about any of that. And I hate to blow up the premise of this own program, but the fact is that, you know, voters are going to be making decisions next year based on how they feel things are personally for themselves first and then for the state or the country as a whole. And I'm not saying that any of this is going to go away and be forgotten for, you know, some poli-sci class at UW, but it's going to be decided based on how the economy is going. And you know, incumbents win or lose based on how the economy is going. That's been the case basically since about the 1980s.
Let's take another call from Pam.
I would just like to say I agree with that. I really agree
right.
with that.
Pam in Alma Center is with us. Hello, Pam.
Good morning, Joy. I just have to say, you know, I vote both Republican and Democrat. I vote based on the individual candidate and what they stand for. And I guess I'm like a lot of other voters, I think, based on people I've talked to, is it's just this level of frustration over the constant bickering and rhetoric and, you know, the finger-pointing and the blaming. And I have to say, Scott, or Steve's comments earlier about the Cadillac thing and the constant sarcasm, you know, when are we going to hear about the real issues? What are people doing for the, what are the legislators doing for the people of Wisconsin? I just don't see this getting any better until the two sides, and Democrats are guilty of this as well. They need to start acting like human beings instead of adolescent and juvenile babies, basically. And, you know, and I'm wondering what's happening in Madison and what's happening in Washington that's going to help the person here in Wisconsin, you know, to get back on track again.
Steve.
Now, wait a second. You're suggesting that politicians have to act like adults? That's just impossible. You know that. But
I think Pam is absolutely right about the frustration. You know, I sit with my clients and people I talk to all the time, and no one wants to hear this anymore. The debate over the debt ceiling was really outrageous, and people just can't take it when they don't know if they have health care anymore. They don't know if they're going to be able to educate their children. And they don't know, you know, what we are going to do in the future for our state. And then we have canard legislation like voter ID when we don't even have an issue with voter fraud in the state being passed, and issues that have nothing to do with the issues that are really hitting people hard. It's really hard to have confidence. And I think now with the voters speaking in this recall and the legislature seeing how important this is to everyone, there will be accountability. And hopefully this tone that Pam has very artfully spoken about will change.
Steve.
I would agree. I mean, it's nice to hear Christine make a small government pitch, because the fact is all of this, going back from, you know, from the tone of campaigns and the backward from the amount of money spent and all of that, is because the stakes are far too high. Whether Republicans are controlling government or Democrats are controlling government, government does too much. And when you have politicians who make careers out of being in office, which was never the intent of the founders of Wisconsin or the founders of this country, and, you know, instead of making millions of dollars doing something actually productive, they end up with all of this political power, you know, that's the result. And, of course, you'll never hear Democrats say that, but if you're really serious about improving the tone and reducing campaign spending and nasty ads and all of it, then you have to be in favor of smaller government. And that could include, you know, some of Republicans' favorite things that they have wanted to do that really are probably not good ideas because they interfere with people's personal lives.
Let me...
Well, Joy, I just have to...
Very briefly.
I can't let Steve say that I made a pitch for small government because, you know, my grandfather would roll over in his poor grave. So I did not make such a pitch.
I didn't think so. Let's talk about the very briefly, because we have so many other topics, but we need to touch on the recalls on Tuesday. Steve, what do you think is going to happen on Tuesday?
I made the prediction. Sadly, I didn't make it online so I could say, hey, see what I did? You know, but I made a prediction about a week ago that the ultimate result of last Tuesday's recalls and this coming Tuesday's recalls was that Democrats were going to gain one net seat to go from 1914 to 1815. And I really believe that there's a good chance that the Republicans are going to pick up the 12th Senate District seat, Jim Holperin's seat. The reason is that you may notice that there are three Republicans representing that district in the Assembly, but they have a Democratic state senator. And, you know, I've always thought that you do the math if you look at the number of Assembly districts and what the mix is versus the Senate districts. That's a good indicator of how close the race is. That's not the case with Bob Warch's seat because they have two Democrats down there versus one in the Assembly. So I'm going to guess that Warch is going to survive, but I think there's a good chance that Holperin is going to end up losing on Tuesday.
Christine?
Well, you know, I live up in God's country, and I have my home is up in Lac des Flambeaux also, and that's Holperin country. And I can tell you that Holperin has really benefited from a long record of being a very moderate legislator in representing the people up there and reflecting their values. And in the last election, not the tsunami, but he won because he had bipartisan support. Many, many Republicans supported him up north. We have a candidate against him who has no experience as a legislator, who has been shown to have very questionable background, and who really wouldn't even appear with him publicly in a debate because she couldn't do it without notes and reading from a script. I think that the person that really deserves our support because of his background and what he's done for the people of the northern counties is Jim Holpern, and everyone's going to see that. There's no way that Kim Simek pulls this off. Jim Holpern holds his seat. And Wirch, likewise, he's extremely popular. There's no question he's going to win. The GOP backers have even pulled away from putting any money into airtime because they know he's going to win. So we come back and we protect our two, and we win too. So we're in really good shape.
Well, finally on recalls, State Representative Robin Voss says that we ought to recall the recall. He says that he's introducing legislation that would be a constitutional amendment. It would require a reason for a recall. Currently, no reason is necessary if you want to attempt to recall a legislator or an elected official. Christine, is this a good idea or not?
You know, I think it's really a terrible idea, and the fact that he would come up with this now just shows the lack of respect he has for the process. It's the process that's in question. The constitutional allows a recall under extraordinary circumstances, and that's the only time it's ever really been enacted or in Wisconsin. And when you think about how much more extraordinary could we have been than this year when we had the largest demonstration of the people of Wisconsin in the capital of 150,000 people ever. So when trust is abused, and when there's extraordinary actions on the part of the legislators who take up bills and legislation that is never even discussed before the election takes place, and then comes into office and sweeps in really huge legislation that changes everything with regard to the way we treat our public workers, recall is one of their only ways of saying this is not what we're going to put up with. So when the process is in question, when the electorate is abused, there is an extraordinary remedy in our Constitution, and I believe it absolutely should stand. There's no chance for this Robin Voss bill going forward. It will fail.
Steve.
Well, I'm not sure. It probably won't get it if it gets to the statewide vote. I'm not sure it's going to pass. I also am not. I don't think it really should. And the reason, my interpretation of what Christine was talking about is considerably different as far as sneaking around on things. That did not happen. Unions were not telling the truth when they said that. However, having said that, it's kind of similar to placing restrictions on the First Amendment, which is a horrifyingly bad idea. And it's a bad idea to put restrictions on recalls because people haven't been responsible in starting recalls. The only, you know, ultimately personal responsibility is the only thing that allows civilized personal or political behavior to take place. And ultimately, you cannot have any different system than to say that, well, it's up to you to decide what the grounds for a recall is. Using, you know, I guess I'm now regretting the fact that I did not start a recall campaign against Jim Doyle back in the early 2000s when he said, we cannot, should not, and I will not raise taxes. And then he proceeded to do so to the tune of $2.1 billion. But I don't support recalls because you don't agree with people's positions. The way to recall people is to vote them out at the next election. That's the legitimate, that is the legitimate use of politics, recalls or not, but that doesn't mean that you ought to change the law for recalls.
Let's turn our attention to national politics now for a little while anyway. Republican presidential candidates met in Iowa last night and had a debate. We have other news with the presidential race and that the Iowa straw poll is tomorrow. Your thoughts, Steve, on how this race is going for the Republican nomination?
Well, I will first admit that I did not watch the debate. I was at a much more worthwhile event, which was my kids' vacation Bible school, although I'm slightly deaf this morning as a result of that. However,
what I've read about, and, you know, frankly, the other reason I didn't watch is I'm really a skeptic about the value of debates in politics, and I'm really not a fan of the Iowa caucuses or the way that the primary system is set up. Having said all of that, it appeared as though, from what I've read, that the ultimate winner was probably Mitt Romney because he didn't lose. It's kind of a bizarre thing when you talk about people who are front runners in, you know, very early in campaigns where all of a sudden, and, you know, you're talking about an election that will not, the presidential election won't take place for 15 months, but, you know, already you have people like Mitt Romney, supposedly the front runner, playing defense, and by not losing, you're winning, which strikes me as really bizarre, but that appears to be what's happening. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Rick Perry's campaign, except for the fact that Republicans, and I'm not quite sure why this is, but Republicans seem to look at Rick Perry kind of similar to what they look at with Mitt Romney, as though he's not really Republican. And, you know, I don't see that, I guess, but maybe my standards are a little bit different.
The other
thing that's amusing to watch is two people from Minnesota just ripping apart each other, Tim Pawlenty and Michelle Bachmann, which is certainly not just in debates, but they don't seem to be fans of each other, which is amusing to watch.
Yeah, they had some fireworks last night. Your thoughts, Christine, on how the GOP field is shaping up?
Oh, I just think the GOP field is fantastic. They have a fabulous group, and with Michelle Bachmann being number two and now Rick Perry coming in, could we have anything better? So, you know, I hope they just keep going and keep bringing in good candidates like Governor Perry, and President Obama will do just fine.
Do you think, Christine, that Newsweek was politically or sexist, politically biased, or showing sexism by its cover of Michelle Bachmann with the wild-eyed expression and the Queen of Rage title?
Yeah, I thought your previous hour was really great, Joy. As a woman, you know, I can say I didn't like it. I thought they did the same thing to Hillary Clinton, and with, you know, her raging face during her campaign, and I think that you have to be careful of it. But you know what? I have great respect for Tina Brown as a publisher, and she's taking Newsweek back to the top. And, you know, from Michelle Bachmann's perspective, she's really not complaining about it because everyone's talking about it, so it's helping her in a way, in a kind of a weird way. And Tina Brown's helping Newsweek, so there's two strong women benefiting from a crazy cover. So, you know, as a businesswoman, I can say, well, that's good for them as a feminist, which I am, of course. I don't think it's good for women in general. So Queen of Rage is not a title that I think we should be attributing to our presidential candidates, no matter how true it really is.
Mm-hmm. And quick thoughts on that, Steve?
Well, the first thought I had was Newsweek is still in business. And remember, this is a publication. Remember, this is a publication that stuck Diana's head on I don't even know how. Some of the really poor Photoshop jobs they did for this travesty that they did about, you know, her supposed 50th birthday. But having said that, some people don't take photos very well, and so the photo is not a big deal as far as I'm concerned. That phrase, the Queen of Rage, is a different issue, and it seems to me that feminists really ought to object to that, because what it basically says is that, well, you know, women politicians are at the mercy of their emotions. They don't have any control. And that's, you know, that was much more objective than the photo. The photo is kind of like, you know, who cares?
I do
agree that she is certainly getting a lot of benefits from this rather ginned-up media controversy.
Do you, Steve, have thoughts on why Sarah Palin decided to show up in Iowa just in time for that debate?
You know, I think in her mind, she's still toying about running, despite what she didn't say. Either that, or she really likes the funnel cakes at the State Fair, possibly.
Well, I thought it was the deep fried butter on a stick. I thought we only had that in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
I was
terrible.
Very happy to know Iowa had it too. So I know that she's coming for butter on a stick. Yeah.
So how important is this Iowa straw poll, Steve? You're not a big fan of this.
you know, it's so early. It's 15 months from now, the presidential election. And, you know, next summer, probably in about 6 months or less, we'll know who the presidential candidate is going to be. But, most people don't care about presidential politics right now. They're looking at, you know, something worthwhile, like high school football or the Packers starting up. But this is just way, way too early to be discussing any of this, I think.
Well, people in Wisconsin are thinking about the recall of Governor Walker right now, in addition to school politics and school sports and getting kids back to school. So I think people are thinking about it. And I think that, when Washington comes through this extremely dysfunctional debate on raising the debt ceiling, which was really a no-brainer and just a false crisis that was created by the Republicans, you know, everybody's thinking about it. I'll tell you, people that I think don't care about politics ask me about it all the time. Christine, what are we going to do? What do you think? And people are thinking about it. So people are worried.
We are going to talk about the whole debt situation and the downgrading of the U.S. Credit rating and the volatile stock market this week after we come back from this short break. Plus, we have our Week in Review quiz as well, so stay with us. Talking with Christine Bremer-Moogley, attorney at Bremer and Trollope Law Offices in Wausau, and Steve Prestigard, who is author of The Presta Blog. If you'd like to join in, we invite your participation as well. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Steve Prestigard and Christine Bremer-Moogley during this edition of the Week in Review. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. Word is out this week that filmmakers are working on a movie about a particular achievement of President Obama's, and they are apparently getting some inside access from the government. And that's not sitting well with some people. This is the Week in Review question. What is this movie going to be about? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. If you think you know, we will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers and will contact you and offer you one of the books that we have featured on the program recently. So what is the movie going to be about? It's about a particular achievement of President Obama's. Okay. No answers from Steve Prestigard or Christine Bremer-Moogley. We will announce the answer and the winner of the quiz at the end of the program. Let's talk about the economy this week. A week ago today, Standards and Poor downgraded the U.S. credit rating, and that was followed by a wild up and down week on Wall Street. Steve Prestigard, what's going on here?
Well, the thing you have to remember about the stock market is that the stock market, there's two things. First, you never make investment decisions based on what happens in one day. But the stock market, the other thing is that the stock market anticipates how the economic and political events of today in the U.S. principally, but worldwide as well, are going to affect corporate profits in the future. And given the fact that half of the households in this country own stock in publicly traded companies, including some of the biggest ones in this state, that is important. And the stock market, I think, is basically voting on not just what's happening in Washington generally, but specifically on this debt deal, which was a ridiculously short, a debt deal that doesn't solve the debt, basically. And that's the reason, the thing is that with the debt increasing, what is inevitably going to happen is that interest rates are going to be increasing, and that's not just going to affect people buying houses or trying to buy cars or other consumer items with credit. It also really affects the ability of businesses to get credit in order to do expansions of their own businesses. So the market, I think, is voting and has voted ever since President Obama signed it into law last Tuesday about the debt deal, and their vote is clearly no.
Mm-hmm. Christine, your thoughts?
Well, I think that, I can't disagree much with what Steve is saying, but I think it really goes to the larger issue of fear that people are feeling right now about the future. When we're in gridlock in Washington, people don't feel like they have confidence in what's going to happen. And so when we've got Republicans who are demanding a balanced budget without really understanding, without more revenues, we cannot have a balanced budget. You know, if we don't have more revenue coming in than 15.5% of our gross national product, gross domestic product, how can we possibly have a balanced budget without raising revenue? You know, our revenues that our country is taking in right now is at 1950 levels, and that was before Medicare. So, you know, if people don't recognize the reality and stop playing politics and talk to the people and make them understand what really has to be done here, you know, we can't move forward. Politics have no place right now. We are really in a bad place. And so when we see the markets crashing because people are afraid because no one really understands what's going to happen, there's a reason for it, because no one is talking the truth to the people about what really has to happen here. It's not just about cutting. We can't continue to cut education and not expand our economy. And if we don't do that, if we don't expand our economy, if the people in Washington don't come up with some really strong initiatives with regards to a jobs bill, that's Democrats and Republicans, we're going to stay in a fear mode, and the stock market won't recover, and small businesses like mine and Steve's will not be able to get loans and will not be able to move forward. So something really has to happen, and everybody has to wake up. And it's not about playing with making false, you know, crises like the debt ceiling crises.
Yeah,
it's about talking to the people.
Steve, should Tea Party Congress members take some blame in what happened?
They're the ones that prompted attention on a debt in the first place. They deserve, I'm sure Christine will disagree with this, but they deserve a huge amount of credit for having completely changed the debate. You know, the debate was, before August 2nd, the debate was about, well, how are we going to reduce the debt? Was it going to be merely by budget cuts? Was it going to be by tax increases? And, you know, the third choice, and really the only thing that's going to work, is by whatever is required to actually grow the economy in a significant sense. I guess the economists say that there's actually an expansion is taking place. Clearly, nobody notices it. But, you know, the Tea Party, this all got started because of the growing deficit and debt, about which Congress was doing really nothing. The problem is that what Congress created doesn't solve the problem. When all you're doing is reducing the growth of the debt, which is what you get at it's really $900 billion because that other $1.5 trillion, they can't even say where that's coming from. That's not solving the problem. The number, back when President Obama started negotiating on this, was $4 trillion. That's the number that was needed to mm-hmm. at least have the debt at the same level in comparison to GDP. And
exactly.
I think Congress really needs to go back and...
Right.
The Republicans, Obama brought that forward, and the GOP said no. You know, I think that that's what's ridiculous about this. Obama has come way over, you know, from the progressive standpoint, way over the line where we would have wanted him to be, to say, okay, $4 trillion, that's what Standard & Poor's wanted. And the Republicans said no, and they said, we want a balanced budget amendment. Standard & Poor's, you know, we don't live and die by them, God knows, but Standard & Poor's said they don't even believe that a balanced budget is a good idea, because in a crisis it gives you no flexibility. So when we say that there is a problem with our budgets right now due to lack of consensus in Congress, and we've got the president saying, okay, we'll cut $4 trillion, and the GOP says no, what is this really about but politics?
Let me move on, since we're almost out of time, to the super committee that was created by that debt deal, and the members were appointed this week, without naming every single one of them right now. Steve Prestigard, do you have hopes the super committee will be able to work something out?
That's a good one. You know, the item that I saw was that they were looking for racial and ethnic diversity on the panel. It's clear what the Democrats were not looking for was ideological diversity. I'm old enough to remember when there were members of Congress who were concerned about balanced budgets and fiscal responsibility. We used to have a U.S. senator here, Bill Proxmire, who was hugely concerned about that. Paul Simon, senator from Illinois, Paul Tsonga, senator from Massachusetts. These were people who were actually concerned about how much money the government spent. And clearly, all of them have passed on to the great debate chamber in the sky. And they've been replaced by nobody on the Democratic side that I can see that really is the least bit concerned about fiscal responsibility. And certainly none of the Democrats on that panel seem to be, based on their records in the past. John Kerry, come on. You know, that's yet another waste of time. And clearly the result of the looming 2012 elections and nothing else.
And Christine?
I think it's hysterical, Steve. Like some of the things you say, I just love it. But, you know, when we think about what the other side has put forward, every one of them has taken a pledge from Grover Norquist. So, you know, talk about lack of anyone having an independent mind. Here we go with a real joke. Senator Kerry has at least come forward with a great idea, in my opinion, about starting an investment bank to expand jobs. I mean, he's got some ideas. I feel sorry for him that he's going to waste his time on this super committee, because I think it's very doomed from the beginning when we put on, in a very facetious way and really a mocking way to the people, after they put us through this debt ceiling crisis and they named these jokers to this committee on the Republican side, who all signed a Grover Norquist pledge that says, we refuse to raise taxes, and anything that raises revenue to them is a tax raise. So where are we going with this? What's going to happen is the trigger is going to be pulled, and the $600 million in discretionary spending on the domestic side is going to be cut, and that's going to be Head Start, that's going to be education, that's going to be job training, that's going to be health care for the poor, and that's who's going to hurt. And that's the tragedy of this. And that's what people don't know, because this was passed in the middle of the night and nobody talked to the people about what was really happening. So this is a tragedy. And when Nancy Pelosi said she agreed that this was a Satan sandwich with Satan fries on the side, she was right. This is terrible.
Well, you know, another thing that was terrible, and we only have a couple of minutes to go on the program, the rioting that we saw happening in England all week. It's quieted down some, but there were just massive riots in London. They spread out throughout England. We have seen some of these mob-like events in the U.S. as well. But Steve, what are your thoughts about what's behind the rioting in England?
Well, and to be honest about it, I don't know what to think about them, because it's not clear to me as to what their cause is. You know, you had a week ago at State Fair Park, you had marauding youths, apparently, and that forced a major crackdown at the State Fair, of all places. You had earlier this year in, I'm not sure how related this is, but in Vancouver, people, you know, the always placid, nonviolent Canadians responded to losing the Stanley Cup Finals by ripping apart downtown Vancouver. I'm not sure what it is. I'm not one of these people who believes in the end times, you know, being near, but I've tried to figure out what it is, and it doesn't seem to make sense in it.
Very, very quick thoughts, Christine.
I think it has to do with the economy in Britain. They've cut. They've cut programs. I think there's a very large segment of the population that's very unhappy. The wealth is being concentrated in the hands of a very few. And, you know, it's going to come down to these kinds of demonstrations by kids that have nowhere to go and nothing to do and no hope for the future.
We'll do more programming on that in the future. It is time to congratulate Nathaniel in Milwaukee. He is the winner of today's Week in Review quiz. What is the movie going to be about that focuses on a particular achievement of President Obama? It's going to be about the killing of Osama bin Laden. Republican Congressman Peter King of New York is calling for an investigation between the filmmakers, which also produced the Oscar-winning Iraq war movie The Hurt Locker, the administration saying that military operations may have been compromised. The film is due out in October of 2012, right before the presidential election. So I wish I had time to ask Steve and Christine their thoughts on this, but I don't. Steve Prestigard, Christine Bremer-Moogley, thank you both very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joy.
Not watching.
All right. Thank you both. Have great weekends. Steve Prestigard, author of the Presta Blog, and Christine Bremer Moogley, attorney at the Bremer and Trollop Law Offices in Wausau. Thanks to Rob Ferret, to Chris Molina, and to Bill Martins for producing this program. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.